5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Oxygen is our friend, but it is the enemy of snacks. But snacks are our friend.
It's hard to choose between two good friends.
Yeah.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 435 for the week of November 28th, 2022. I am brown sugar spoiler, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Red 40 Truther, Sarah D. Bunting.
It's very bad.
Empty calorie, Tara Ariano.
But I'm full of love.
And flavor dust, Adam Grossworth.
You wanted flaming hot, but you got sour cream and onion.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he is the co-host of the Muppeturgy podcast. You have heard him with us many times. It's our dear friend, Adam Grossworth. Hello, Adam!
Yay!
Equalizer!
I realized I should have replaced the yay with a yay from Kermit for this one. Dang.
I could have sent you several to choose from. Oh, well.
We have all assembled here today to talk about snack versus chef. In this new cooking competition, 12 chefs, home cooks, food scientists, and restaurant consultants are challenged to recreate commercially available snacks like Ho-Hos, Pringles, and Oreos. And if you're thinking, that sounds a lot like Claire Saffitz's Gourmet Makes video series on Bon Appetit, that's because it is very much like that. But recreating existing snacks is only half of the show. After the first round, chefs have to create their own snacks that are thematically linked to the inspiration food in the first round. For example, a snack that leaves residue on your fingers after the Flamin' Hot Cheetos challenge, an intentionally shareable snack after the first round involved Kit Kats, etc. Three chefs compete in each of the first four episodes, with each of those winners proceeding to the playoffs. At the end of the competition, the ultimate winner gets $50,000. Your judges are people you've never heard of. Your hosts, plural, are comics Hari Kondabalu and Megan Stalter, and we're going to talk about them for sure. Eight episodes dropped on Netflix this morning. As you're listening, we will not spoil who wins the whole thing, and most probably will not get very much further into the season than the premiere, but who's to say? Let's do the Chen check-in. Adam, should our listeners watch Snack versus Chef?
I mean, watch is a strong word, but put it on in the background and maybe look at the middle section occasionally. Sure.
Okay, Sarah.
What Adam said, I mean, like seeking it out, no. Agreeing to it over the holidays with family, absolutely.
That's a good point. Dave.
I mean, I watched the whole thing.
We did.
But I don't know. I'm not quite sure I would recommend it.
Yeah, to me, this is very skippable. And like, take that with the grain of salt that I'm not a cooking show person. But even grading on that curve, there's a lot of problems with the construction of the show.
Yes.
And we'll get into it.
I was going to say, it is watchable as a critical exercise because the construction of the show is something to behold.
Yeah.
And how easily it could have been a much better show.
Yeah, this is something that we should maybe do as like a recurring feature where it's like, fix my show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I got some fixes for this one. But anyway.
We could do it just about Netflix food shows.
Yeah. But Sarah makes a good point that this might be fine programming to watch with like an all ages group of people at holiday time because it's not offensive. It's about snacks. People are already probably eating because it's the holidays. So, yeah. Anyway, let's get into it.
All right. Let's start off with is the bad title.
Yeah.
It's not Snack versus Chef.
No, it's not.
They're not opposing elements.
No.
It should be called Snack Chef if they want to use those two words in there. Get that versus out of there. Furthermore, not to get us off topic right away, but since the word versus came in there and I mentioned this to Tara, I sure would like the world to come together and just figure out the one way we're going to present versus as a word in something, whether it's going to be just the V, it's going to be a VS, it's going to be a VS with a period, it's going to be a capital V, small S. Let's just figure it out. Let's have a definitive rule for it, and let's, like, make it law. I'm not a grandfather. It bugs me so much.
Okay. All right, let's start with Adam. You are a home cook and a baker. How compelling did you find watching these people try to copy existing products? And is that something that you have ever wanted to do yourself?
It is not something I've ever wanted to do myself, because why? Yeah. And I mean, today's point about the title, like the thing, if it were going to be versus, I will come back to actually answer your question, but if it were going to be versus, and the version of this that I think is sort of more interesting as a show is a thing that they do on other shows, which is like to either make the elevated version of something.
Right.
Which I mean, I like that thing, but I also like an Oreo. An Oreo is perfect. Why? Well, you don't need an elevated Oreo. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's fine. Like, that's fine, and you can do that. And I will also eat that if you put it in front of me. So you can do that, or to use the thing as an ingredient, like they do on something like Chopped, and that would actually be Snack versus Chef, I think.
Yeah.
So that would be, I think, a better show. But I also do find the science interesting, because like all of these things are insane. Like, first, just in the proprietary creation of them, and then how do you mass produce something consistently and package it to be shelf-stable? Like, all of that is interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know that this show solved that. Like, I don't know that this show got at why that's interesting.
Yeah, the show's not the vehicle for that. It's not being the vehicle for that, rather, I should say.
But occasionally it's trying, though, which is one of the problems, that it's like, I think it doesn't necessarily understand what is good about it.
Right. I ended up watching an episode of Unwrapped after this, because I was like, this has been done before, right? And I Googled it, and that was the first thing that came up, and that's on the Food Network app. And they sort of did that, except that they're like, and here's how you make Cheetos. We can't tell you, it's a secret. I'm like, well, okay, right. Why did you even do this segment then?
Yeah.
But so the parts of the show where they were trying to recreate the snacks, I found kind of interesting, right? Where, like, they're tasting, like, the Flaming Hot Cheeto powder and trying to figure out, like, you know, which 10 chilies are in it or are being chemically reproduced in it. Like, that was kind of interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But they all failed. Like, yeah. None of them succeeded even remotely.
It's true. And then here's where we have to throw to our process nerd, Sarah. Like, where did this let you down in an area that historically you found very interesting?
I feel like, first of all, parameters of the judging were not consistent. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy that the judges are food scientists and like a marketing person. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, that makes sense, because if you're trying to either recreate a snack or innovate on a snack, you want to hear from those people. So in that way, it was like, not Shark Tank, but like the Pat Kiernan version that only I watched. Hi, Pat Kiernan.
Well, or like Supermarket Superstar, that show that we watched that was Shark Tank for food.
Yeah, which I think was the Pat Kiernan.
Oh, it was? I forgot that he hosted it. Sorry.
Anyway, some of this information is like second screenable. So there's that aspect of it. But like, if you're going to get into the Mythbuster parts of it to the extent that you're allowed by IP law, then get into it. But when you have this like sort of mauve Cheeto that looks like strawberry shortcake took a dump on a plate, this is very tasty and you have that umami, like, but it looks like strawberry shortcake took a dump. Like, can we talk about what's really happening here? So it started to be processy enough, and then always there had to be a pause so that the utterly superfluous and not funny hosts, quote unquote, could step in.
Well, that's a perfect segue to one of Dave's complaints, and we had many in terms of the construction of the show. Dave thought two hosts plus two judges is too much when you only have three chefs working. Dave, proceed.
This show would have been so much better if they just said, fuck it, we'll just rip off Great British Bake Off format, 100%, have mm-hmm. every contestant do every challenge. Mm-hmm. It's just right. Cheetos. I mean, the kitchen they're in went from three contestants to five or six at some point with no problem. Just make it a little bit bigger. Have yeah. all nine of the people at the same time. And just have it so that you have a Paul Hollywood baking smarty, maybe two baking smarties, and then one host. You don't think you need two for this because your jokes are lame or they just weren't prepared or there's an open call at the last minute on Twitter. Please, yes. if you're funny, come down and host yeah. our show.
Yeah.
No experience needed with anything. Like, it was, the hosting was so bad. Anyway.
But like, Ali Buzari is perfectly funny. I mean, I'm sure yeah. they were writing for him, but like him and Helen Park, that was plenty.
Yeah.
But they needed more baking. I wanted yeah. more results because basically this show is the technical from Great British Bake Off mm-hmm. and something approaching the showstopper.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. that is sort of their format. But so just embrace it and have it so you get more of each one so that there are more possibilities of good mimics and more possibility of complete disasters. And I think that would have been a stronger show because the contestants were boring. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. hosts were boring. Mm-hmm. One of the experts was boring. The only person that was holding his own, as Sarah was saying, was the dude. And he seemed to know his shit. So yeah. he was sort of like Paul Hollywood and Prue stuck together as one person.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is about the marketability of their ideas.
Yeah.
I think you just have somebody after, as a talking head, do a post-mortem on it. As a, how could you sell this? How could you get this on the shelves of Walmart kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And they would go that mm-hmm. way. Rather than have that person be omnipresent, because that take on it only really comes in at the end. So you don't need them on the floor all the time.
Yeah.
The whole format perplexed me. And I don't know if this is a Netflix thing. The set looks half finished, like literally. Like yeah. the outside of it is like a yeah. bodega, and
the conceit is cheesy, and it looks like it's a kids show. Like
right, yeah. There's this vending machine. If listeners, if you're not watching, and I assume after everything we've said, you're not. the who's competing, and what they're making drops from a vending machine. But then Megan Salter obviously is not reaching her arm into that vending machine to pull out the prop, which is cute. The props are cute. Mm-hmm. And there's like this obvious cut. And then everybody's reacting to it as if they didn't just watch the thing fall from the... It's so stupid and yeah. so badly done, and I hate it.
But also, the vending machine is used for eliminations, which conceptually makes no sense.
Yes, yes. Yeah, when they get to the playoffs, the way it works is, like, they just announce the winner. Like, the winner is X, and it's like, yay! And then it's like, then the loser is suspense created by, like, thing falling from vending machine. But the vending machine thing that falls, that's what you want. That's not what you're rejecting.
I like Hari Kondabolu and Megan Salter in other contexts.
Yes.
Contexts. And Hari Kondabolu I really like on Wait, Wait, No, Tell Me, which is a thing where he is, in fact, improvising. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I know he can do this. I've only seen yeah. Megan Salter on something scripted, but I'm pretty sure she's funny. I don't know. They just didn't seem to have anything.
Yeah, she's a comedian also, and I feel like she didn't know how much she could do, like how much comedy she could actually do, or she was doing crazy stuff the whole time and it got cut. It's impossible to tell from what we right. see, because you would never know she is a comedian or a comic actress based on what makes the cut. Like, all we basically see them doing, I mean, the clip that Dave used of Hari Kondabolu at the beginning was like one of the four funny things that he kind of said in the entire season, truly, because the rest of the time they're just like, so-and-so, tell us what you're making, so-and-so, tell us about your food, tell us what, and then they like have no follow-up. And the other thing that they do differently here than on Bake Off is they also have the hosts at the end tasting the food, but then they don't comment. Like, they don't even say it was good, I liked it, or like, I would do this differently. They just have no input. So then they're just sitting there at the judging, at behind the counter in the fake bodega, like just taking up space. It just feels like they did not get any direction as to like what the tone of this was going to be, who the audience was going to be, what they were expected to do. Because what overwhelmingly came across to me in Meg Stalter's performance was that she was acting like, wouldn't it be funny if I was like the host of a cooking show and then she just did this? Like, it's, she's trying to be yeah, a straight
she
face.
She seemed upset to me. She seemed like she was like, eh. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. and since she had no purpose but to wear bright lipstick and mm-hmm. say things that we already saw happen two seconds before, I don't blame her. Mm-hmm. I will say the first episode, like, Dave is absolutely right that the more explodey Cheetos in the hot oil, the better. I feel that was amusing to me because I am very basic, but
And also interesting because, like, why does that, like, the science of why that happens was interesting to me. I actually learned something. I mean, I'm not going to try to make Cheetos, but I learned about what not to do in my kitchen. I watched that one, and I watched the Pringles one and the Oreos one. Mm-hmm. The second challenge was, like, very tangentially related to the recreation. Mm-hmm. And to your point about this whole thing not being thought through, right, the Cheetos one was to make a snack that leaves a residue behind, which is just stupid.
Why is that a wanted thing?
Right? And then the one person made a fruit roll-up type thing, which, I mean, A, it looked revolting.
It really did.
But, oh my God, it was bad.
I mean, and like, the flavor sounded good. Like, I spread that like on a cake. Fine, you made jam, good for you, but like you, like, glopped out on a piece of paper, it's so gross. But also, like, that's not the same thing at all.
No,
like, as even if the residue is your goal, that's not what they meant anyway. But the Pringles one was to make something useful, like to make a snack that could also be useful. That's Fun Dip, that's not Pringles.
Right,
like, who has ever in the history of the world used their Pringle as a spoon? I mean, I guess for dip, but like, that's not a thing, yes, for dip.
I mean, okay, I get it. Tuna salad, but that's raising her hand on the Zoom.
But like,
yeah,
I don't know. It just was such a stretch, and nobody had thought it through, and I didn't understand what we were doing.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Sandy's cheesy pickle crackers were interesting. He was the only one that I
thought disgust delicious.
Yeah,
I
mean,
yeah,
would eat.
And he was like the only one who got the texture right the entire episode.
He was pretty consistent. But yes, it was a real, real mixed bag with this. All right, Dave wants us to list our top three favorite commercially available snacks. And I applaud him because my baseline on this show is really like, I don't even like people mixing two kinds of cereal in the same bowl. Like, trust the manufacturers. You don't know better than them. So I don't countenance any of this reproduction of stuff you can already buy. But who wants to go first, counting down your top three commercially available snacks? Why don't we start with our guest?
Oh, wow. That's such a hard question. I mean, Cheez-Its are, I think, my number one.
Okay.
I don't know really where to go from there. Cheddar Goldfish. I'm a cheesy boy.
And
got a type.
They're the same thing, but
Ritz
sure.
crackers after you leave them out for a while.
Cheese ones.
No, not Ritz. I don't know. I'm a sort of classic Cool Ranch Dorito, but that's like a childhood favorite. Mm-hmm. I haven't really had those in a long time.
Yeah.
I might just go like mini pretzels. I might just keep it classic and salty.
Mm-hmm. It's a good list, Sarah.
You put anything on your pretzels? Do you eat them raw?
I mean, to Tara's horror, I will mix them with the Cheez-Its.
Oh, that's fine. I'm fine with that. Because that is commercially available in Canada. In fact, this came up in the Magicians episode that we talked about last week where someone was eating Super Mélange, which I didn't even remember what they called it.
Oh, Super Mélange with a Coke Diet.
But yes, it was teeny nacho Doritos, mini pretzels, Cheetos. I feel like there was a little thing. Oh, like Shreddies or something, like cereal pieces.
No, it was like Melba Toast. Oh, so good.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. All right, Sarah, what is your list?
Number three, Cool Ranch Doritos. Mm-hmm. Number two, chocolate dipped Ritz crackers, very rarely available, or they would be my number one. But my number one, and I'm not proud of this, but everyone else thinks these are disgusting, so there's always plenty left, cheddar cheese cracker combos.
No, I like those.
Oh, no, I love those.
Oh, okay.
Combos are great. Combos are the ultimate airplane food.
I only eat them when I fly.
And maybe that's why I think
of it. And it is enough salt in one of those bags for like 2 months.
Yeah, and I go for the pretzel ones, so they're even saltier.
Yeah. I'll go with either. If it's a morning flight, I go cracker. If it's afternoon or evening, that's a pretzel flight.
And if you're a monster, the pizza ones.
I've never even tried those.
No, that's why.
They're so good.
No,
yeah.
They're the best ones.
I wish they would put the pizza ones in the cracker shell. Mm. But that podcast pizza over. Cheese that they use is really, it's roof stoof.
Dave.
Well, historically, I would say number one is Coffee Crisp, which is a Canadian chocolate bar, which is coffee-laden wafer kind of thing, kind of like a Kit Kat.
It's like a mocha cat, kind of.
Yeah, right. It's really good. The problem is now I am like the coffee crisp lady where nobody knows what to get me. So every once in a while, 10 pounds of coffee crisp arrive at my door. I'm like, I can't eat all. So I OD'd a coffee crisp over the past couple of years. So if you're within my voice, please no more coffee crisps. I actually can get them here in Austin when I want now. I found a place. So thank you very much. I would say that was probably historically number one. Lately, what I'm really into is salt and vinegar popcorn when I can find it. There is a brand called Live Life Pop, I think, that makes really good, like, well-coated, generous flavoring amount of salt and vinegar popcorn, all that. And then Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Classic. Oh, yeah. Solid. I have candy is all like in my honorable mentions because I'm more of a savory guy, but Take Fives.
Yeah, Take Fives good. Yeah, I got to give an honorable mention to Twizzlers, Canadian old recipe because they changed like the formula at some point the past year. And they are not good anymore. They're like too much towards a gusher, actually, which is another episode of the show. They're just too yielding. They're not chewy enough, and the flavor is off. So my top three, Canadian O. Henry, that's my chocolate bar that people send me, and I am not saying that you should stop. If you hear my voice, I'm happy to keep receiving them. Also Canadian Philadelphia cream cheese dill pickle dip, which you cannot get here.
It's really good.
A second where American Philadelphia cream cheese like came out with dips and all of their flavors were completely whack and none of them were dill pickle. And I never saw them in the stores here anyway. But, you know, love for my family is like here and love for that dip is here in terms of like reasons to go back and visit Canada.
That was good podcasting.
Okay, sorry.
You guessed which one was on top of the other.
I was implied. I think they understood.
Yeah, I think they got it.
She loves her family.
My mom listens to this and she knows where she raised. No, just kidding. Love you, Mom. But my number one and timeless classic, with all due respect to Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Crunchy Cheetos. Not Flamin' Hot, just the standard old style, salty and cheesy. It's a classic for a reason.
Yeah.
It's time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara.
Hello. Mythic Quest came back to Apple TV Plus for its third season. At the end of the second season, the two leads, Ian, played by Rob McElhenney, and Poppy, played by Charlotte Nickdow, left to create a new video game together. And to shorthand season three so far, it is not going great. I really want to like this show. When it hits so hard, but it is... it's so, so uneven. Like, an off episode is real off. And this season especially, I feel like a lot of the more jokey seasons have, like, multicam energy in a weird way. It'll just, like, ping-pong back and forth, but the editing is off. The writing is, like, sluggish. The performances are, not tight enough. They have so many characters. At this point, I pretty much only care about Brad, who's played by Danny Pudi. He was the former head of monetization at this video game company. He went to prison in season two. He's now back officially working as a janitor in the office, actually manipulating his former colleagues. I need to keep watching and figure out like what his end game is. He's the only one I super care about. But there are other issues. There's a character named Rachel who's played by Ashley Birch. She left in the second season to go study programming in Berkeley. The show's set in LA. She's always there. And it's like a plot point where people are like, why are you here? You don't work here anymore. And it's like, she's here because she writes for the show. Like, let's be real. That's the reason. Also, dumb sitcom reasons. Also, her episodes are always the worst. Sorry. But other issues include it's too generic. It's like too generic office comedy. It's not enough about the video games anymore. I realize it's absurd for me to say that because I don't care about video games unless they're about moving colored balls around. But there's that. This show even had to do a Zoomers get offended too easily, like semi-plot line. Like, really? We're still, this is still a concern in the culture. And the whole first episode of this season revolved around taking or not taking like a giant investment offer in this video game that they're trying to get off the ground. And we go back and forth about should we not. Neither position is ever explained other than like, okay, you take it because it's money. But like the other side doesn't ever say like, here's the reasons why. It's just like, I'm not feeling it. And then it's never, they don't come back to it ever. It's a $60 million investment. And they're just like, nah.
One of the problems with this season is that they're falling into the Silicon Valley trap where, yeah, they're just resetting their show with slightly higher stakes, like a video game where you level up, all your enemies become a little harder to sort of match your new power set, and you're kind of still playing the same game at the same level, except now your bullets are twice as strong and your enemies take twice as many bullets to kill. That is sort of where the show is going right now. Mm-hmm. Is what Silicon Valley did about 5 times during its run, where they just reset it, they became more and more successful, or then they lose it all and reset, and then they lose it all and reset again. And this is sort of like one of those where, like, there's another company and the company's doing exactly the same thing they did in season one, and except it's just 2 people instead of a whole bunch of people. And it's like, okay, I've seen this before. What else are you going to bring into it to make it new and fresh and different? And it's not. It's like not even the same. It's staler now.
Yeah.
So You're right. There's something off about it. There's something sluggish about the whole thing. Way too much of the assistant in the show now. Like, she was the angry, crazy assistant who now, I didn't remember her being kind of a right-wing kind of nut in earlier seasons. That's something, that's a note they've really leaned on in this one, which is, it's not great. And it just feels like it doesn't have that spark anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know.
The other problem that it has, and here's where I will throw a recommendation for a different show, is that this season comes after the first season of Players on Paramount Plus, which is also about video games. Very, very different show. Mythic Quest is an office comedy. That one is like a mockumentary. It's from the creators of American Vandal, and it's about esports. For anyone who thought Players is too inside nerdy for me, I don't know anything about esports, I had to ask Dave while we were watching the pilot, is this a real game that they play? It is. It's League of Legends. Right? That's what, it's been a while. I still loved it, even though I know zero about esports and certainly do not care about them at all. But the show is like that good and well-made and compelling and specific. Like, it just feels like you are inside that world. And even if you don't get every single reference, like, you get the vibe because you can tell they had an incredible amount of attention to detail.
It also has the benefit of being the first season. I mean, the way they set up that, I feel like that might be the same thing all over again if they do a second season now that they're at the next level of competition. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see. But the first season is really, really good.
First season was, it was a surprise how good it was. Yeah.
For my plug, I kicked off a series of monthly posts for GQ where I tell you if you can only subscribe to one streaming platform, which one gives you the most value for your money.
So excited for this.
That's at G. And it has a runner-up as well. It's like, you know, details on the number one, short bullet points on number two. And that is at GQ. We will link that in the show notes. And I'm going to also give a shout-out to the Patreon for our sister podcast, Again With This, because it is the end of the month, and that means it's time for Again With Them, where we talk about Jenny and Tori's terrible 90210 recap podcast, 90210 MG. That is a perk for our high roller Patreons at the $5 level and up. We will link that in the show notes if you want to hear us get real granular on what these Dorcases are up to in November.
Adam, what do you got?
This was not on my list, but I want to give a quick shout out to Lego Masters on Fox and Hulu. It should be half an hour, and so I wish it were on Netflix. But if you want to see nerdy experts who are much better at television with a better but also really annoying host in Will Arnett doing something really niche, better pick than the food show that I already forgot what it's called.
Snack versus Chef.
what I had actually planned to talk about was first, a quick report in my role as Smash correspondent. Yes, in the year 2022, there is news about my and Tara's beloved Smash. there is a musical adaptation of the Marilyn Monroe movie Some Like It Hot currently in previews on Broadway. I have not seen it, but the music and lyrics are by Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, who wrote the songs for Bombshell on Smash. apparently there was a moment in the show that wasn't working, and when they were trying to come up with a new song for it, they realized that they had already written it. So now Let's Be Bad from Smash is on Broadway. So baby steps to Bombshell and Hit List actually happening. The dream is alive.
Incredible.
We're through the looking glass, people.
Truly.
For my actual Around the Dial, I thought I would keep it on theme and recommend another cooking show, one that I enjoyed much more. Selena plus Chef has had 4 seasons in 2 years and survived the HBO Max purge, so someone is watching it, but it seems to be off the radar of people in our circles. The conceit of the show is that in 2020, Selena Gomez was quarantining in her mansion with a couple of her friends and her grandparents, and she decided that she wanted to learn to cook. And rather than get a book or watch some YouTube videos like a normal person, she had her gorgeous giant kitchen outfitted with remote cameras and a big screen TV on which she can basically Zoom with celebrity chefs. So each week, groceries are delivered to her door and the chef teaches her a recipe and also the basic techniques involved in making it. And the show also makes a considerable donation to a charity of the chef's choice, and they get to talk about that. So there's like a little feel-good element to it. You know, it could all be fake and reality TV bullshit, but given the COVID of it all, I choose to believe that it's more or less real. I'm sure there's a ton of editing. Definitely no one ever washes a dish. As an old person, I was only dimly aware of Selena Gomez before Only Murders in the Building, and I started watching this around the same time. And I find her very charming, her friends less so. But if you don't know how to cook, you'll learn something. If you do know how to cook, you'll also probably learn something, at least a fun recipe. The chefs are invariably kind. Like, they are so patient with her and charming. And, oh, no, no, don't hold the knife that way. You're going to hurt yourself. And sometimes she does. Even people who I have disliked intensely in other contexts, Richard Blaze, come off really well on this show. You know, if you're doing something else, much like with Snack versus Chef, you can kind of zone out in the middle and come back for the reveal. It's just a nice show. And Sarah and Tara Lindsay Price does make an appearance. So
hey!
you could do it for Again with Again with us if you wanted
okay.
to.
Okay.
Amazing.
Duly noted, adding it to our extra topic list.
There are also cute dogs.
That's a lot of pluses. All right, give us your plugs. Mm-hmm.
I am one of 4 co-hosts of the Muppeturgy podcast. We are watching the original Muppet Show on Disney Plus, and we go into extremely nerdy and pedantic detail on every episode. We talk about what was happening in the news and pop culture when it originally aired, which means I've watched several other late 70s shows and TV movies, which sometimes overlaps with this podcast in some strange ways, like Backstairs at the White House. I'm still not over it. And we go very deep on the music and the guest stars and generally analyze these things much more deeply than anyone ever intended. New episodes drop every other Thursday, so if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, our episode on the Leslie Ann Warren episode will come out tomorrow, and you can find us wherever you get your podcasts and on Muppeturgy.com, where we just started selling merch, so that's exciting. And you can find me on all the social medias at Adam807 and also on the EHG Discord, which really is as much fun as these guys keep saying it is. So join the Patreon and join the conversation.
Sarah D. Bunting.
There's a lot of cute dogs on our Patreon, too. Just
I was going to say, including Adams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Cheers rewatch. Alas, following various sports teams in our household can put a crimp in the old rewatch/marathon, but a long weekend is always a prime opportunity to rip through a couple dozen sitcom episodes, so Dan Brady and I got after it with Cheers the last few days. I am not a crackpot, but I think the second half of the 7th season of Cheers is some of the show's best work. The show's gift often is that you absolutely see the rule of three setup, punch, structure, Catskills-y thing, whatever they're doing, you see that it's coming, but it's executed so professionally that it is an absolute pleasure to like say the line that you predicted along with them. And just like the predictability is the good part. They really lean into some of the super mean humor in season 7. Frasier and Lilith get a lot to do, and their participation, at least in that part of the show's run, is proportioned correctly. And I will add to my not a crack pottery heap of shards that Kirstie Alley is not given nearly enough credit, not just for her timing and lack of vanity in the role of Rebecca, but for the degree of difficulty here, given that the writers can't decide which Rebecca we're going to get in any given week. And sometimes from scene to scene within an episode, and they kind of leave it to Kirstie Alley to play whatever she's given with some kind of through line that she has to provide. Like, sometimes she's a battle axe. Sometimes she's a neurotic screeching mess. It's not that those things can't and don't coexist in a real or realistic person, present company excluded, of course. It's that the writing doesn't seem intentional with those multitudes, which leaves Rebecca as the butt of the joke, or worse. Sam is straight sexually harassing her 80% of the time. And in addition to being cretinous, his monomaniacal devotion to the Fuck Becky project does not track with a legendary swordsman that we've been told he is for however many years. That is a problem, particularly in the 7th season finale, which just gaslights Rebecca with no turnabout at the end. Like, I don't need to hang out with Kirstie Alley either, but the rainbow of ways the show's writers find to shit on whoever is in this role is dispiriting. And then it was season 8, Eke Cold Cord, which unfortunately really hangs a pretty bright light on how dipshittily Rebecca is written to behave sometimes, except when it's convenient that she is not. And also, him? Like, God bless and keep the late Roger Reese, but with Evan Drake, it was pathetic, but at least you sort of got it. This is kind of like, so he's rich and, like, I don't know what the received wisdom is on Cold Cord, actually, but the writing introducing him and him as plot catalyst feels just claggy and a beat too slow for, like, 3 episodes, and then the season kind of writes itself and tracks back to the ensemble stuff that it is the ruler of. I know there's a lot of love out there for the 4th season of Cheers, but seasons 4 and 5 were very hateful to Diane in a very similar way to the issues that I've just listed about Rebecca's writing. And as I said, you know, it's the same issues here, but season 7 is just more enjoyable and there's less of a bitter taste to it, in my opinion. I don't know if anyone is in agreement with me, but back half of season 7, very good and much easier to overlook some of the, I don't know, just like not having enough women in the writer's room. Like, what is the other Perlman fucking playing at with Diane and Rebecca sometimes? I don't get it. Anyway, I guess there's a segue here, Ray, how it's criminal the way the writing fucks Diane and Rebecca around, but I will spare you a note instead that I run an all true crime bookshop and you can still get in on that 15% off all new and notable items sale over there. I'll have more sales coming up in December with the 12 days of Crimesmas. Not sorry. There will be a different tag on sale each day. Come browse around or grab a gift card at exhibitbbooks.com.
Speaking about rewatches, me and Tara have been watching Quantum Leap. And we just watched this one episode. There's been a lot of weird stuff in Quantum Leap in the last few episodes. There's an episode where Sam's pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then there's an episode where Al has to do the ABC rap in a mental asylum while all the patients are there, gape mouth at him. Oh, this is so uncomfortable. It's so weird. But here's my Quantum Leap question, because there's a lot of weird stuff going around with the rules of whether it's Sam. Like, what's going on with the physicality of the Quantum Leap universe when Sam leaps and is inhabiting somebody else? He sees them in the mirror.
Yeah.
But the physical part of him seems to be inhabited. Like, he'll inhabit smaller stature people, like kids sometimes. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you know, he still has to duck if there's a door frame and that kind of stuff. So here's my thought question for you. Okay.
I can't believe you're doing
If
this.
Sam leaps into a woman on Quantum Leap, mm-hmm, and then takes an elevator, presses the 3rd floor button with his penis, does it work?
Yes, because it's still his body. Sam said, like, what other people can see is still the projection of the other person.
Mm-hmm. Then why does he have to, like, duck and stuff like that?
I don't know.
Well, and especially if he's jumping into a pregnant woman's body and then getting on an elevator, do not do that, because then he's going to have to give birth. It's a rule.
But the whole storyline with the pregnant woman is that he was going to give birth and they didn't have the equipment to give birth.
Right.
He just felt this baby inside of him, which,
right,
like, they never really said there was a baby inside of him. He just had all the symptoms of, you know, the feelings, you know, just like, you know, like, he's got really bad gas and he thinks it's a baby.
Yeah.
But he was, like, seconds away from giving birth to the baby and then he finally leaps. What would have happened if he didn't leap?
Yeah.
Would it be like the alien chest burster? That's what I'm asking. There's no good rule set here when it comes to the physicality of Sam Beckett in a leaped body. And I don't know if he could penis press the elevator button or not.
This is, of all the things that people complain about with like time travel logic, this is one that rarely comes up.
This is the best.
Seems like that's an oversight in Dave's opinion.
All right, fine. Well, I got to find better people that will have this argument.
No, I'm listening. I'm trying to help you. I'm explaining what I have learned from the show. I agree. It's very inconsistent. They are all over the place. And I mean, because he did say he could feel the baby, but then Al says the baby of the woman in the waiting room. They're like, and the doctors say it's gone. Like, we don't know where that baby went.
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what this new show is about, finally settling this. I'm not going to tune in after that first bad episode. But, yes. You know, if you're watching the new one and they finally figure out the whole penis button thing, you'd let me know. Here's what's coming up on the next extra, extra hot. Great. Settle in, because this is the last live recording before the holidays hit us. You'll be getting new stuff, but it's already in the can. Here's what we got for you on the next five extra, extra hot. Greats. We've got Princess Bitch. Tara forces everyone to watch a compilation of TV commercials from December 1992.
Yep.
Featuring a kid who puts his whole fist in his mouth for no good reason.
Sure does.
Green Flag TV. The TV shows, when people mention them, make you think, all right, I'm going to pay attention to this other person's recommendations because they hit something personal within you. We've got Space Squares, which is somebody suggested on our Discord. Hollywood Squares. But in space, how would that work? And so we figure that out.
Yep.
All those will be available to any supporters. Go to patreon.com/extrahotgreat to join. Get all of those, plus access to the Discord, your chance to have free stickers, a whole bunch of perks there. And then on our next EHG Primes, first up, we've got Guess Thought Experiments. Tara, this is your idea. You want to nutshell that for us?
Sure. We have been asking our guests throughout this year as a sort of a last parting question, amusing, a philosophical question about shows that they know well, crossing them over. What if X met Y? What if
Sam Beckett could press a...
Exactly. That one has not come up.
Okay.
But, so you know...
Can we ask for 2023 whatever question you had, and then also ask them as a second question about Sam Beckett's penis pressings?
I will see.
You know, right. For kids.
Look forward to that. Tons of your past favorite guests are in that episode.
23.
And then after that, we've got a listener game time. If you remember, we recorded two of those relatively recently. This is the one where 5 of 9 people showed up, but we still had fun. It was still a great time. After that, we've got a couple unlocked Patreons for you. And then after that, we've got the New Year's Eve non-regulation game time run by Tara, played by me and Sarah. Pretty sure I won that one. We'll find out. We haven't played
yet. Yeah, me too.
catch all of that coming up in the month of December. It's time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is Adam. Take it away, Adam.
We are recording this a few days after American Thanksgiving, so I was thinking about Thanksgiving episodes and was surprised to see that Will and Grace isn't in the canon yet. I'm not super optimistic that I can succeed if Tara and Joe couldn't, but here goes. I am bringing you Will and Grace Season 3, Episodes 8 and 9, Lows in the Mid-80s, Parts 1 and 2. It's the night before Thanksgiving in the year 2000, which somehow is now further in the past than the flashbacks in this episode were from then, but moving on. And the gang is having dinner out before going their separate ways for the holiday. While they wait for a table at the bar, they notice a young woman crying about her boyfriend. Sensing some similarities between her and Grace, they tell her the story of when Grace brought Will home for Thanksgiving in 1985, when they were freshmen in college and dating each other, which just happened to be when Will figured out he was gay and broke her heart. Festive. Here's why I think this episode belongs in the canon. Number one, much like the episode of Frasier you discussed recently, and the Cheers episodes that Sarah was just talking about, this is a comedy ensemble at the height of its powers. The restaurant scenes give them lots of talky banter, almost like a drawing room play, while the flashbacks put them in situations and wigs we haven't seen before and let them play with some heightened farce. Their comic timing is perfect, as in clip one.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm feeling a little lightheaded. You see, there's this one teensy little complication. Actually, not so teensy.
Are you hungry?
Gay. What?
Are you
I'm
hungry?
Gay.
What?
I'm gay.
Point two, there's also some real heart. A casual viewer of Will and Grace might reasonably wonder why these people are even friends, especially with Jack. It's not a question that particularly needed an answer. This is a 90s sitcom. But we get a pretty good one here in clip two.
Stop saying that, okay? I am not.
You're gay, Will, okay? You're gayer than the day is long. You're Marvin gay. And let me tell you something. Ain't no closet big enough.
This is ludicrous. I mean, we spent all of 4 minutes together.
Yeah, and in the first 4 seconds, I could tell that you were carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders. And about 20 extra pounds in your hips. Why wouldn't you? It's a drag pretending to be something you're not.
If I'm pretending, then how come I can't wait to get back in there and have sex with my girlfriend?
Well, if you can't wait to get back in there and make muskrat love to your girlfriend, then why are you on the phone with me? Yeah, that's what I thought. You're my new best friend. Call me every 5 minutes.
Figuring out your sexuality and coming out during your freshman year of college can be hard, I've heard. Getting dumped can also be hard. By showing us how Jack came into Will's life and the role he played in all of this, we learn a lot about both characters. It's very like Jack and the show to wrap up some of the real emotional truth inside jokes and insults. And also, we give Deborah Messing a hard time on this podcast, but I really love that they let Grace have this moment. Clip three.
You bastard! I'm in love with you, and you're treating me like some sort of test drive! You take me out for a spin, and you go, I don't really like the feel of this one! I think I'd rather have a stick!
Don't you see what a compliment that is? I mean, I love you, so if I can't make it work with you, then it'll never work with any woman, because you're perfect for me.
That is not a compliment. A compliment is you're sexy. You turn me on. That one look at you proves I'm a queer.
Point number three, Megan Mullally. Karen didn't know any of these people in 1985, so she just gets an entirely separate flashback just because. It's total nonsense, but she makes it work. She can also make the most predictable sitcom lines sing in clip four.
You mean tonight isn't Thanksgiving? Oh, crap. Then I have to spend all day tomorrow watching Stan gorge himself on thighs and breasts and turkey. Well, if we have to wait, why don't I get a bottle of champagne?
That's a nice idea.
What would you guys like?
Sarah just said it about Cheers, and I'm going to throw it right back at her. You know it's coming, but she makes it work.
She does.
Point four, Debbie Reynolds. Clip five.
I heard yelling. Is everything okay? What's going on?
Nothing.
Will's gay.
Oh, sweetie. Oh. Julius, I owe you $20.
I mean, come on. Will and Grace's stunt casting in later seasons could get exhausting, but Debbie Reynolds is a national treasure, and she was always perfectly deployed as Grace's mom. It is really weird to me that this was 22 years ago. A lot of Will and Grace's age badly, but I think this episode still works for the same reasons other classic sitcoms work. It's good actors telling good jokes, and not just for the sake of a laugh track. They're rooted in character and emotional truth, and these are people we've come to know and care about every week. They literally don't make them like this anymore. I will use the word they clearly wanted to and couldn't and say, thank you for considering this fag's pitch for the canon. In conclusion, clip six.
Are they coming back? Because I still don't understand what this story has to do with me and Tom.
Oh, cripes. Honey, let me give it to you in a nutshell. Your boyfriend's a big, flaming, feather-wearing, man-kissing, disco-dancing, Vermont-living, Christina Aguilera-loving, Mykonos-going. Honey, take it on home.
Tom's queer, dear.
Merry Christmas!
The Merry Christmas at the end is very good. I'll go first as a past Will and Grace submitter, which Adam mentioned. I don't know if I would submit that episode now that I tried. It's the one with Matt Damon and the Gay Man's Chorus was the one that I pitched. This one, I agree with you that it has aged less poorly than a lot of them have. And the reason is because, you know, Grace loves gay men has been a punchline on the show for the entire time. And here we actually get to see, like, not the origin story, but like that there was, it was a real emotional moment in her life. Like, it was a pivot point, truly. And the fact that she and Will were able to get past it, like, just tells us so much more about their friendship and makes it seem deeper in retrospect. I'm giving this show so much credit, but Adam, I think you're right. Like, this is a very special one, and not just because it's double length. Like, I certainly give Deborah Messing most of the shit she gets on this podcast, but she is a really good physical comedian. She knows how to be a sitcom actress. Like, she clearly, like Megan Mullally, gets so much energy from the audience feedback, and I think is really strong in both the goofy parts of this episode and the emotional ones. I mean, even the small moments, like when Sarah Rue comes down as her sister Joyce, and like the two of them just sort of slouch and like they hate each other. It's just a tiny scene, but it reveals so much character. Like, a lot of thought went into every part of this. Everybody's wigs in 1985, so many mullets, including on Bobby, the Debbie Reynolds character, Grace's mother. Dave called out, but like, what is that green shit on the walls? Like, that would lattice wallpaper was very in at a time.
Yep.
That time was the 70s, and so it makes sense that it would still be on the walls in 1985. More credit to Debbie Reynolds, not just as a comic actress, but when the camera cuts to her for the first time, she is doing pretty frenetic choreo for someone who at this point was in her, maybe her 70s, I didn't look it up, but who was old. Like, and she's really going for it. Like, there's a lot of kicks. It's fast. Like, she's doesn't seem like she has missed a step at all. And the relationship between her and Julius is also very funny. I owe you 20 bucks. Made me laugh. I mean, you heard me. Made me laugh hearing the clip again. I know I've seen this episode many times. I laughed every time they cut to Karen in the club, like, just living her life on the floor, being a complete lunatic like we have seen.
Ready or not, that song is the perfect song for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the title of the song.
Some Like It Hot, I think. Yeah. But the Martina Navratilova cameo is like, that's one of the things that's not expected and is hit so much harder for that reason. Like, when she appears, you did not see that coming. I am not sure how the rest of the panel will go, but this was a very convincing pitch and I was happy to watch it again. So why don't I throw it to Sarah?
The first note I took on this was a double episode. God damn you, Grossworth. This show just has never succeeded for me. But and there are still some off-putting parts of this. Like, even when the show hangs a light on Sweetie, we talked about that sound, like, not for long enough, and hanging a light on it doesn't help. Like, don't let Deborah Messing do that. That's your star. Be nicer to her. Get her out of her own way. But there is something about this episode that is so sort of fondly bittersweet about what this time must have been like for these characters. Like, sometimes the show, leaving aside Eric McCormack's convincingness, which he isn't usually, but he's much closer here, I think, to something real. And so is Deborah Messing. Like, that there is this, like, tragic screeching happening in her parents' kitchen, and like, it just seems like the end of the world because you're 18 or 19. Like, she really gets at that in a way that I was not expecting her to be able to do. And it's not too far in one direction or the other. Like, you see that this is funny. You have, like, the perspective on it because everybody's, like, grown now, and this is a sitcom after all. But there is, and in the Jack performance in this episode as well, there's like a little note of sadness amidst all the wisecracking that I think really works. And, you know, I've endured a number of these episodes for the canon, and I'm always sort of like, okay, it's just 22 minutes. And then this time I was like, fuck. But this, I think, is
the show doing all the things it does do well, the best that it does them. And there's Debbie Reynolds. And like Martina, we will uncancel her for 5 minutes for the purposes of this because she has some anti-trans things that I don't love. Yeah. Like no one's going to take your Wimbledon plates. Stay out of it. But, and you know, Karen, like, is just a pleasure. Like, there's absolutely no reason for this story to be in there except for Megan Mullally to do it. And then, like, the, you know, other characters are like, why? What does that have to do with it? She's like, your story was boring. Like, I mean, usually that's true. But in this case, the performers really, like, they just had the, they just had the bit in their teeth. And it was really, it was good. I was not bored. I was not annoyed. The wigs were entertaining because they looked sort of, you know, realistically, memorably bad. And poor Ever Carradine. that last moment, I mean, it is very kind of old school sitcom-y, but when that's done well, like we've been saying at other times in this episode, it's a pleasure to see it executed well. Mm-hmm. So great presentation. I actually enjoyed this. I retract my curse upon the House of Grossworth. and thank you for bringing this to us. It's not perfect, but it's very good. And I think it's probably the best that the show did. Dave.
All right. I have a couple cop items first. Dave Cole, set cop. There is a grocery store scene.
Oh, it's so bad.
There is the emptiest carton of milk I've ever seen. Yeah. Will throws it in his hand basket. It bounces around his hand basket like yeah. It's the Super Bowl.
I noted that too.
It's just put some rocks in it. I don't know, guys, do something. And second of all, the grocery store itself, which is a D'Agostino's, which is, you know, one of the island of Manhattan grocery store chains. Mm-hmm. They are all smaller than a supermarket that you used to in the suburbs, but they're large for New York City. And this one had a single door entrance. None of them have single door entrances. That's a bodega you're thinking of, not a grocery store. There are no D'Agostino's that have just a door that opens like...
Yeah, no, it's automatic doors on a corner lot. Yep.
I wasn't going to put this in a canon pitch, obviously, because I want you to vote it in. But I found it deeply strange that they went out of their way to not only like name the chain multiple times, but to get the rights to the branding to put it on the awning and then build that fakakta set.
Yes.
So strange. Mm-hmm. Just say
Tara pointed out, which is they had metal shelves, you know, just those typical kitchen shelves, the shiny metal ones, except they didn't put the top shelf on it. And so there's just these big rods sticking out for you to gouge your eyes out on.
Yeah. Just say you were at the grocery store. You don't need to be that specific about it. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything I liked about this episode was Karen based. Hall. Oats. That was great. All those cuts that were just like totally nonsense were funny. Karen was always my favorite part of this show. A show I don't like. So I continue not to like this show. I think this episode has the least gay zoo exhibit tendencies that this show has that always bothered me.
Yeah.
And I think it was a lot of laughing at, not with on this show. And I just don't like this show. I just don't find it funny. I think this is one of the better episodes of the show, but there is no chance I'm putting it into canon. So I'm just going to stop my argument there because I don't think it really matters. And nobody wants to hear me harp on this yet again for the third time on this podcast.
Flibbity flu.
Flibbity flu indeed. All right, let's put this to the official vote. Tara Ariana.
Giving it a Vermont living yay.
Sarah Devending.
Merry Christmas. It's a yes for me too.
All right, that means
Dave's homophobic.
Or am I a true friend?
Here's an ally.
All right, that means Will and Grace, Season 3, Episodes 8 and 9, Low in the Mid-80s, Part 1 and 2, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Break Camp.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Well, well, well. If it isn't time for winner, loser of the week. Winner. Going on. Okay. I get to kind of punch.
Hey, messy.
Our winner is Mary Beth Peel. She played Grams on Dawson's Creek. And the reason that she is our winner this week is that Michelle Williams, also a star on Dawson's Creek, played Grams' granddaughter.
Grams Jr.
That's right. Grams Jr. Mm-hmm. She received a performer tribute at the Gotham Awards this week, and she used her acceptance speech to shout out Mary Beth Peel for influencing her acting career. She was a 16-year-old emancipated minor, according to Vulture, when she met Peel on the set. And Williams says, she was brimming and bursting with energy, and she showed me that creativity was more than a mere profession. She encouraged her to think of acting as art, to consider herself an artist, to move to New York and really make a go of it. And, you know, she ended up being nominated for 4 Oscars. But so far, she's still very young. Certainly a favor to win to get another nomination this year for The Fabelmans. But the end of the blurb here is, I wouldn't have known how to handle being Steven Spielberg's mother without having been Mary Beth's granddaughter. Oh, it's so sweet. Aww. So we don't always link winner and loser stuff in the show notes, but we're going to link this one so you can watch the whole speech.
You have to go watch it.
Which Variety tweeted. It's really lovely and sweet. I have mixed feelings about that show. I don't. I loved Grams. I really hated the show. By the end, Grams was the only thing keeping me sane. And so for her to mention her in this, you know, very non-prestige-y teen show is quite lovely.
And Mary Beth Peel, I mean, she did such good work on, I'm talking about her like she's dead, she's not. She did such good work on The Good Wife and does a lot of stage work. And so I've gotten to see her quite a bit since then. And she's always phenomenal. And it was really lovely. And I actually hope she's okay, because it really did sound like a eulogy. So
yeah. Well, apparently.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think she has like a cold. This is under discussion on our Discord as we speak. So I think she's fine. But I mean, she's in her 80s. So.
And she's in an off-Broadway show like right now. Like she is she is actively performing as we speak. So
get well soon.
And loser of the week?
Ugh. Well, speaking of team shows, it didn't go so well for One Tree Hill creator Mark Schwann. His former stars, Sophia Bush and Hilary Burton, have added yet another chapter to the lengthy book of Schwann's misdeeds on their Rewatch podcast. Apparently, he made them do a sexy Maxim shoot on threat of losing their jobs if they refused. And he told their fellow star, Bethany Joy Lentz, that she was, quote, too fat, and claimed to the other two that since Lentz had said no, did not happen, they had to do the Maxim shoot. Also, the producer's strategy for drawing in more male viewers at this point in the show's lifetime was to add an abusive male character to the guest cast. The more that comes out on this podcast, the more, first of all, that I think that Hilary Burton is my queen and should be everyone else's too. And also that, like, One Tree Hill, like, y'all start suing for emotional distress and don't stop. Burn it down.
We'll link this in the show notes too, because as I read the report on Variety, it was like, it just kept going. And I was like, what the fuck? What the fuck? Like, you just cannot believe this shit happened, except you can. It's depressing. And also depressing to think, like, this went on probably every day of their working lives, and they were on the show for like 500 seasons, which is a drag.
Yeah. It's fucked.
Speaking about being a drag, do you know what time it is?
It's gay time.
Is it?
Yeah,
Game Time. Welcome back to Game Time. This is the 7th game of the season. The scores are value guess with 4. If Adam wins today, the guests win it. Tara has 2. Sarah's still looking to get on the board. Today we are playing Peaky Minders. Minders. From Dan Casino.
Oh, no. Damn you, Casino!
Who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing. He writes, the sheer volume of TV shows being produced means that it is impossible to keep up with all of them. So how many details about shows that premiered this year, 2022, can you actually recall?
Fuck.
In this game, I will read you the name and description of a TV show that might have premiered in 2022, along with some of the actors who feature in it. You have 3 choices. Either all the information is correct, all the information is incorrect, or just one piece of information is incorrect.
Okay.
First, you tell me whether you think it's all true, all false, or partly true. If you correctly identify it as real or false, you get 2 points. If you correctly identify it as partially real, you get just 1 point, but you can earn 2 more points by telling me what part of the description is false.
Okay.
Name of the show, the actors, or the description. Okay. You do not have to give the real information. Just what part of it is false.
Okay. Sort of.
Got it.
Steel meal situation, please, to our area.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah DeMunting continues to perch atop her pile of 14 steel meals. I have 11. Adam, I regret to say you have been cleaned out by previous valued guests. You have Eric's meal, and that is it.
Reinwald Jones.
All right, let's throw it to Pinky to see our order today.
We will start with Tara.
We'll go Tara, Adam, Sarah. We've got 30 questions. We got 2 Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zones, or as Adam calls them, just Challenger Zones. Are we ready to play Peaky Minders?
Yes.
Yes.
Good luck, everybody.
All right. Tara.
Yep.
The show is The After Party.
Mm-hmm.
It features Glenn Golding and Meryl Wilson. The description is, a high school reunion's after party ends in a murder, and a detective must piece the night together to find out who did it. Your options at this point are all true, all false, or partially incorrect.
Partially incorrect.
All right. So, Tara, tell me, you've got the name of the show, you've got the actors, you've got the description. What part of that was not correct?
The actors.
The actors is correct. Stars a bunch of other people, but not them. Tara got 3 points there. 1 point plus 2 points for getting the information correct.
Great.
To Adam, the show is Crumbs. Crumbs, as in your toast is shedding off crumbs. Featuring Bill Skarsgård and Hannah Waddington. French-English series originally produced for TF1 in France and released in the US and UK, this period piece follows an underground cartoonist from New York who has to adapt to life in the French countryside in the 1970s. All real, all made up, partially correct, incorrect.
I have no idea. I'm going to go with partially true.
Incorrect. It is all made up.
Ugh.
It's a show that does not exist on our plane.
The fevered brain of Dan Cassino.
Sarah.
Yes.
Crusoe, featuring Keir O'Donnell and Robert Patrick. Modern telling of the Defoe novel that has a man stranded on an island and flashing back to the business dealings and involvement in the slave trade that led him there.
I think that's partially incorrect.
It is completely incorrect. That is another Dan Cassino original.
That sounds fucking terrible.
Tara.
Yes.
Your show is East New York, featuring Jimmy Smits and Richard Kind. Cops in Brooklyn try community policing, with one of them moving into a housing project.
Fuck.
I know where you live and the things you do.
God, I hope he sings it in the song. Okay, I know the title is real. I know that those two are in it. I don't know for a fact that that is what it is about, but I'm going to say yes, it's all true.
It is all true. That is a show on CBS started in October. Adam.
Yes.
The X List. X-E-X. The X List.
Uh-huh.
Featuring Aubrey Plaza and Zac Efron. A young woman evaluating her current relationship is approached by a semi-culty company offering her the chance to re-encounter all her exes.
Partially true. Damn it.
All made up. That is
kind
of the plot of a book called Cult Classic, but it is not a TV show.
Okay.
I would have guessed all true.
Make that show. That sounds good.
Sarah DeBunting, God's Favorite Idiot. Featuring Melissa McCarthy and Kevin Dunn. A tech support employee is struck by lightning, starts to glow, and is told by an angel that he is now God's messenger on Earth. That is all correct, all incorrect, or partially.
Partially?
That is all correct. That is a June Netflix debut show.
Why?
Her husband is in it, that's why.
Oh.
Tara Ariano, His Master's Voice,
mm-hmm.
featuring Eric Dane and Millie Alcock. The story of an upstart record company in the early 20th century encountering some of the greatest musicians who ever lived and trying to sign them while fending off competition from Edison's company.
Fake.
Fake is correct. That is all made up. Adam, How We Roll, How We Roll, featuring Pete Holmes and Chai McBride. Inspired by a true story, this series follows a Midwestern dad who gets laid off from the plant and decides to embrace his dream of becoming a professional bowler.
I mean, sure, why not? Real.
Sure, why not is correct. CBS, March debut for How We Roll, the bowling show.
Swiftly canceled. I watched the pilot and I talked about it on this podcast.
See, this is the problem. Tara watches everything.
I don't.
Sarah D. Bundy. Hunter. Hunter, featuring Peter Billingsley and Piper Perabo. Throwback action comedy remake of the 80s cop series about an L.A. cop who has no compunction about using violence and his clashes with modern sensibilities. Hunter.
Partially fake.
All made up, thank God, is what I have here.
I feel like
Peter Billingsley. That's amazing.
I'm surprised about the thank God because this seems like something Dan dreamed.
Tara.
Yeah.
Let the Right One In, featuring Grace Gummer and, oh God, I always forget how to say this guy's name. Jelko Ivanic. I'm not even going to say it again. After his daughter is turned into a vampire, a sad dad has to keep her alive and try to find a cure for her condition.
Okay, partially true.
That is all correct. That is the new show version of that on Showtime.
That I didn't know they were Grace Gummer?
Huh. Adam, Life and Beth, featuring Amy Poehler and Jay Baruchel. A New York wine salesperson goes to a vineyard on Long Island where she meets a farmer and has to confront her past.
I know the title's real. I'm not sure about the rest of it. All real.
Partially correct. April Hulu show. Cast is incorrect. Amy Schumer and Michael Cera.
Amy Schumer.
Mm. All right. This will take us into our first score break. This is for Sarah. The show is Loot, L-O-O-T, featuring Maya Rudolph and Joel-Kim Booster. The wife of a tech billionaire finds out he's cheating on her, and the divorce settlement makes her incredibly wealthy. So she decides to actually do something with the charitable foundation she founded. Shenanigans ensue.
All true.
All true, yes. That is an Apple TV show from April.
It was bad.
That's 12 of 30. Let's get the scores.
Okay. I have 7. Adam and Sarah are tied with 2 apiece.
All right. That means, Adam and Sarah, you are both in the grocer / normal equalizer challenge. I was at Goodwill a couple weeks ago and I found the most off-brand TV trivia box questions, like from, you know, Goofball Games in the, where to be in the next Trivial Pursuit.
Amazing.
He's bra. Yeah.
Look how generic those cards are.
Oh, jeez.
Love it.
Okay, so that was just a visual, but take my word for it. These are not fancy. So no. I'm forcing you to this one.
Oh.
The good news is there's only 5 questions on a card. So you're...
Okay.
And I'm going to play 2 for the first round, then a sweep to double it up. So you guys only need 2 to get, let's say, 2 points apiece.
Okay. All right?
And if you double it up, you get 4 points. I don't know.
Good luck. Like
that. All right, that's a lot of points.
Thanks.
Fuck it. Let's do it. All right. So the way this works is they have 1 question from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. All right. So you can confer and then give me an official answer on each of these. 1950s. Who hosted Toast of the Town? Good conferring. Nobody has any idea.
I like Jack Parr. I don't know.
It's one of those guys, but yeah, I can't pull it.
Jack Parr?
Sure.
Ed Sullivan.
Ed Sullivan.
Oh, okay.
1960s. On Petticoat Junction, Betty Jo marries Steve Elliott and they have a daughter. What is that daughter's name?
I want to say Ella Mae, but that's a different show.
Mary Sue.
Sure.
You're in the right ballpark. Kathy Jo.
Sure. Kathy Jo.
1970s. Who played Laura Ingalls on Little House on the Prairie?
Jesus, finally.
after you.
Melissa Gilbert.
All right, there's one. Only need one more of these last two questions, and you both get two more points. 1980s. Who played Alex's father, Stephen, on Family Ties?
I got this.
Okay, go for it.
Michael Gross, right?
Michael Gross. All right, just for shits and grins, here's your 90s question. Who played the character Monica Geller on Friends?
Courtney Cox. Arquette.
Yes, Arquette was actually the answer on the card. So
wow.
I was going to ding you.
Wow.
If you didn't say
Arquette, all right.
But you did. All right. So that means both Sarah and Adam will add 2 points to their total. So quickly update totals, please.
Sure. Adam and Sarah and I tied with 4. I have 7.
All right. Getting a little closer then. Back to it. This is for Tara.
Yep.
Your show title is Mexican Gothic, featuring Melissa Fumero and Wilmer Valderrama.
Valderrama.
Valderrama. Why isn't he in the bowling show? Period horror about a young Mexican woman in the 50s who goes to visit her ailing sister in a remote house when the sinister secret.
I feel like if Melissa Fumero were in this show, I would have heard of it, but that doesn't mean it's not real and that she's not in it. So I'm going to say partial. Partial.
Shit. All made up. That was a novel from 2020.
Goddamn.
Adam, your show is Monarch, featuring Trace Atkins and Susan Sarandon. A dying country music singer tries to protect her family's legacy.
That is real.
That is sure real, is. Yes. That is
and how, and guess what else? Marsha Cross is on it tonight.
Oh. What?
Mm-hmm. She plays a record executive.
Of course she does.
Sarah D. Bunting, Night Sky, featuring Sissy Spacek and J.K. Simmons. A couple in Illinois discover a mysterious portal in their backyard, which leads to a deserted planet. Also, there's a cult.
Also, there's a cult.
So many shows recently can end that way.
I hope it's not all true. Partially true.
All true. That is an Amazon show from May. Night Sky.
Skoda, what are you doing?
Tara.
Yeah.
Outer Range, featuring Imogene Poots and Josh Brolin. A Wisconsin rancher has to deal with a rival family trying to take their land, a mysterious black void that has appeared in the pasture. No cults involved, according to the description.
I mean, they have to leave something for season 2. I believe that is all real.
It is all real. Amazon show from April, correct. This is question 17.
It's pretty good.
It's for Adam. The show is called Paper Girls, starring a bunch of young actresses you've never heard of, but featuring Martha Plimpton and Kim Cattrall. Adolescent paper delivery girls from the 1980s are caught up in a time war and have to confront their future selves.
That's real.
Sorry.
No? The cast?
Partially correct. July, Amazon, but neither Martha Plimpton or Kim Cattrall are in Paper Girls.
That's horseshit.
It is not horseshit. It is just partially correct.
All right.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah, if we're not watching it, I've heard it's good.
Rainbow Six, featuring Chris Pratt and Constance Wu. A Navy SEAL seeks to avenge the murder of his family and uncover the truth about what happened to his unit.
I'll tell you what happened to his unit. All fake.
That is partially correct. That is a show. It did star them, but it is called The Terminalist.
I didn't know she
not
was in that.
Rainbow Six. Mm. Rainbow Six is a video game series. This is question. It is for Tara. The show is called Pivoting, featuring Jennifer Goodwin and Maggie Q. After the sudden death of a friend, 3 middle-aged women decide they must change their lives and start making impulsive decisions.
That is real.
That is real. That is from Fox in January. Adam, The Serpent Queen, featuring Samantha Morton and Charles Dance. Historical series dramatizing the rise to power of Queen Isabella I of Castile.
I mean, yeah, another sure, why not? Sounds real.
It does sound real. It is partially real.
What part is it real?
It's actually called Catherine.
Oh, for different sake, Dan Casino.
Fucking Dan. I swear to God.
It's about the Medici.
Okay.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting. Shining Veil. Featuring Courtney Cox, Arquette, and Greg Kinnear. A family moves into a small town to escape a scandal, but wind up being haunted by demons, both literal and otherwise. It's a comedy.
All fake.
All true.
All so real.
Stars,
oh, that's
March,
disappointing.
Also featuring Mira Sorvino, yep, Judith Light, and Sherilyn Fenn.
Wow. Oh, Jesus.
Tara.
Yeah.
Nope.
Slow Horses, mm-hmm, featuring Gary Oldman and Kristen Scott Thomas.
Yep.
The last remaining independent horse ranch in Kentucky. I'm just laughing. I know Tara's going to get this right because we watched it. The last remaining independent horse ranch in Kentucky comes under increasing financial and political pressure.
Well, that is partially real.
Yeah. Okay. And how so?
That's not what it's about.
That is correct. The show is actually about spies put out to pasture in Slough House.
Season 2 coming soon.
Yeah. Good show. Worth watching. It's worth watching with your dad who loves World War II stuff.
Yes.
Too.
Sarah, kind of you show. Might like it. It's very processy. Yeah. It's a spy show.
Oh, okay.
Adam, your show is Sprung, featuring Garrett Dillahunt and Martha Plimpton, who is not in Paper Girls. Just want to remind
again with that bit.
So she might have been in something else, and this might have been that something else. An unlikely group of ex-cons join forces to use their criminal skills for good. Sprung.
All fake.
All real? True.
God damn it.
Sounds like Flippy. That terrible show that we watched, that Forsening with the prison, with Jimmy Simpson. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What was that called?
Yeah. It had some really generic name.
Yeah, with all the right, ex-cons.
Well, you think of that. I will let you know that this is all correct. It is an April show that debuted on Freevee.
There you go.
All right, this will take us into our second score break, getting towards the end of the game. It is for Sarah D. Bunting. Your show is called Starman, featuring Bill Nighy and Chiwetel Ejiofor. And it is a TV sequel to the 1976 movie in which an alien arrives on Earth at a pivotal moment that will decide the fate of humanity.
Partially true?
It is partially true. Which part is the incorrect piece? Is it the title, the actors, or the description?
I think it's the description.
The description is correct. It is the title. This is The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Do I get any points for that or no?
You get 1 point.
Oh, okay.
For the naming partially incorrect. You would have got 2 points if you named why.
All right.
Time for the score, Star.
Well, first of all, that show we were trying to remember is called Breakout Kings.
Breakout
Kings. A&E drama original.
Sure.
Which is why none of us can remember it. Sarah has 5 points. Adam has 6 points. I have 14.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, let's just... sorry, who's last?
Sarah.
Sarah!
Completely true.
Now, I just realized, you know, because there's two people, I just did some bad math, but I have to keep with it. So if you sweep this, potentially you get 8 points. So I'm just saying, you could still be in the game thanks to me not really thinking about it originally when we did the first round. So
okay.
I hope you can make it happen.
Well, in that case, should they each get 2 more points now?
No, it was 4, 4, and 8 was how we did it.
Oh.
4 and 8 split by 2 is 2 points apiece. I'm saying that was too many.
Okay, okay,
should have been
gotcha.
1 and 1 and... You know, 4 or something like that.
Right. Don't make her do these cards.
Hey, who's running the fucking game?
Sorry, Sarah.
Jesus
I tried.
Christ. All right. What was the maximum contestants could win on an episode of What's My Line in the 50s? Maximum winnings. What's My Line?
Maximum winnings.
It's less than $100.
$64.
Incorrect. $50.
Really?
60s. What TV show was created from the popular New Yorker cartoon strip by Charles Adams? Take a guess.
The Adams Family.
Adams Family. Who played Captain Barney Miller?
Also, guest starred on Will and Grace.
Can I steel mill this?
That's... Oh, my God. I
Get
can
in here,
picture
fish.
Him. I can picture these credits.
Get in here, His other name. Characters.
Is
get in
it's
here.
Not,
character of town.
It's not that guy, and it's not what's his face, and it's
got a mustache.
It's not a guy named Carl. I can't pull it. I could
describe him to a sketch artist, but I can't pull it. All right, sorry.
Anybody else?
Hal Linden.
Yes.
Oh, right. Okay.
All right. Still got two questions to get your one needed to pick up your 4 points. 80s. What instrument did Stringfellow Hawk, let's add that to excellent TV character name.
Yeah.
Stringfellow Hawk, what instrument did he play on Airwolf?
Wow.
Stringfellow Hawk. Yep.
I mean.
Fantastic. A plus. Yeah. No notes.
Guitar.
Cello. Huh. The cello. All right.
Not the helicopter phone.
1990s. Here's your last chance. What was the worldwide audience of Baywatch in 1994? And the answer is given as over a very round number.
Oh.
The audience? The worldwide audience.
Worldwide audience of Baywatch in 94, given as over a very round number.
Very round number. Over a billion.
Yeah, is absolutely correct.
Holy shit.
Wow.
And you just got 4 points. So let's update the scores, please.
Okay. Adam has 6. Sarah D. Bunting has 9. I have 14.
Okay. Well, all right. Tara.
Yep.
Swimming with Sharks, mm-hmm. featuring Kieran Shipka.
Yep.
And Dane Kruger. Mm-hmm. Diane Kruger, not Dane Kruger. I don't know who Dane Kruger is. Diane Kruger.
Her brother, Dane. Yes.
Yeah. I confused him with Diane Kroger.
Right.
The heir to the grocery store empire.
Of course.
Who's married to Pacey.
Just Diane Kruger was the name. I'm so tired. Backstage comedy about a young producer at an unnamed show that's legally not Shark Tank, who has to deal with weirdos hawking useless inventions and a set of idiotic, egotistical hosts.
That is partly true.
It is partly true. It's actually the correct answer. What is incorrect there?
The description.
And you are once again correct. It's actually about a young woman who learns to navigate the treacherous waters of a media company.
Created by 90210's own Kathleen Robertson.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Adam.
Mm-hmm. I'm so mad at this game. Yes. Yeah. Love you all.
The Terminal Man. Remember the Terminal Man? We're talking about The Terminal Man, featuring Taylor Kitsch and Gene Triplehorn. After seizures and violent behavior resulting from a car accident, a veteran is given an experimental brain implant which sinister forces seek to use for their own ends.
Ugh, I hate those sinister forces.
That sounds more like a movie, but also CBS exists. So I'm going to say that is real.
That is all made up. It is not a TV show. It is a real book. That's a Michael Crichton book. I remember reading it 10,000 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Made into a movie. I think Jersey Scott rings a bell for some reason.
So you were right.
Not a TV show, though. Yeah. But it is a real thing in the world. Sarah D. Bunting, your show is Tourist Trap, featuring William Jackson Harper and Kristen Milioti. An anniversary trip to Mexico gets a couple enmeshed in a bizarre, unsolved crime involving a murder and a hurricane.
Partly true.
Yeah!
Partly true is correct. What is the incorrect piece? Is it the title, the cast, or the description?
I think it's the title.
Yes, it is the title. The title is called The Resort.
Yep.
Not Tourist Trap.
I watched the first one. It was boring.
Everybody's last question is coming at you. Let's get the scores.
Okay. Adam has 6. Sarah has 12. I have 17.
All right.
That's better.
Tara.
Yep.
Touched by an Angel, featuring Casey Wilson and Theo James. Mm. Anthology series remake of the 90s show in which a woman who might be an angel subtly intervenes in the lives of people facing serious problems and clashes with the angel of death.
Okay, that's entirely fake, but I also just want to take a moment and laugh at the idea of Theo James currently playing fucking Cameron in The White Lotus being in a Touched by an Angel remake with Casey Wilson. I just don't see that journey for him somehow.
Or her.
All right, Adam, here is your last question. Put you out of your misery. I know you're enjoying this. The Undeclared War, featuring Simon Pegg and Mark Rylance. Originally produced for Channel 4 in the UK and released in the US, this series follows a cybersecurity specialist in the UK and her counterpart in Russia as a cyber attack turns into a physical conflict.
The Undeclared War.
Well, I've never heard of it, yeah, but it does sound like something Mark Rylance would be in, and I have no chance of winning, so I'm going to say it's all true.
It is all true.
Hey.
Yes.
Nice.
It is a Peacock show from June. Yeah, that was on Peacock in June. Yeah. And our last question for Sarah D. Bunting is called Welcome to Flatch. Welcome to Flatch. It stars Sean William Scott and Jamie Presley. Mockumentary about the quirky residents of a small town in Ohio based on a British series.
I know it exists. I'm pretty sure Presley's in it. I have no idea what it's about, but I'm going to just guess that it's all true.
It is all true. That is from March on Fox, currently airing its second season.
I got a screener for that shit like today. Otherwise, yeah, I wouldn't have gotten that.
Had a crossover with Call Me Cat. So that's mm-hmm. exciting for everybody involved.
It was real weird as the one person in America who watches Call Me Cat.
Let's get the final scores, please.
Okay. Adam finished with 8. Sarah D. Bunting, 14. I finished with 17.
All right. So as we end our live tapings going into the new year, we do not have a season winner. We'll pick all this up in the new year because today belongs to Tara.
What's up, Tara?
Woo!
Tara.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Now, usually at this point, I start reading off some notes that I made ahead of time, but this week I forgot. So let's see what we did today. You remember back when we were really young and we were opening up our snacks versus chefs and gobbling them down? Mmm, tasty. And then we went around the dial with stops at Mythic Quest, Selena Plus Chef, the Cheers rewatch, and of course, a lengthy and very serious discussion of whether Sam Beckett could press an elevator button with his penis or not when he leaped into a body of a woman on Quantum Leap. Stay tuned for part two of that in 2023. Adam Grossworth got Will and Grace's Low in the mid-80s into the canon. We crowned a winner and a loser of the week. And Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Dan Casino. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
it tastes like snack.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Sweetie, we talked about that sound.
And Adam Grossworth.
So it's my cottage cheese ass.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great. Happy holidays, everybody.
When I get home, I'm going to rip your heart out through your foot.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.